This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Was I born to sing that or what?
She didn't sign her name.
Hey, when did Toby Keith get there? No, that's Matt.
Secret that she's walking around in my sleep. Dream walking, pillow talking. She's calling my name again. Day's breaking, I ain't breaking. Look, I'm sleeping again. I'm on a roll.
The secret is you gotta have the music up loud.
This dream man.
Seriously, I ripped this song like nobody.
She took my new son.
Anyway. Top five stories in early bird. Number one, Iraq and Afghanistan veterans are split on whether the wars were worth it. Well, hey, that's a surprise. You mean they all don't feel the same way? Holy shit, what's that about? Should get their act together. Lee O'Shane writes this. It was a membership survey. By who did it? According to Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, 47% said U.S. involvement in the Iraq war was worth it, against 43% who said it was not. Hold on, here you go. Anyway, what the hell? 43% was not worth it. Opinions on the Afghan war were slightly higher, with 62% in favor, 28% opposed. Slightly, that's substantially higher, right? Leo, come on, man. Did you suck at math? I know you were enlisted Marine, so you probably did. Exactly, boys and girls, stay in your seats. We know you enlisted, mass clowns, can't add. That's why you're enlisted, come on. We got an MCI for that, though. Math for Marines. Durr. Opinions on the Afghan war. Okay, look, 47%, okay, say that the opinion of people that responded to the survey said the Iraq war was worth it. 62% said the Afghan war was. That's 15%, right? So every poll's got plus or minus, right? Well, this is an opinion poll, so I don't know. How do you have a plus or minus for an opinion? Anyway, 15 percentage points, that's not slightly, okay? Substantially higher. I think they should start submitting some of this stuff to me before, so I could red pencil it. 4,600 members of the group were surveyed. The survey consisted of a host of public policy and military transition issues. So anyway, more than 2/3 of the veterans said that the American public supports the veterans. Hey, you know what? Here's my opinion on that. Americans support their military and veterans. You know, some of them don't know because they haven't been exposed. But when Americans get exposed when Americans get exposed to it, they respect it. You know, and but a lot of them just aren't around it and don't know anybody, and so they don't know. And they'll say, you know, like everybody, they'll say dumb stuff. I mean, like I say dumb stuff about the things that I don't know about. All right. About 77% of those surveys said the country as a whole has not make much progress. I think that's, now we got to do spelling for Marines. Has not made much problem in solving one of the top veterans' challenges, suicide. That's about to change, boys and girls. Hold on to your hats, because post-traumatic winning is coming to a theater near you. And I want it to go to high schools. I want it to go to colleges, to your business. We can do this. There are sports fans. We can do this. All right? And it's about being a better person. It's about caring about people more. It's about loving them more. It's about pulling them closer to you. It's all of that. Boom, Marine Corps culture. Consistent with past surveys from the group, about 65% of the members of the Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans Association members know a fellow 9/11 veteran who has attempted suicide, and nearly 60% know one who has lost their life. The stigma of getting care also remains a major stumbling block for group members struggling with mental health issues. In the survey, 84% of veterans said they do not believe most veterans in the community are receiving the mental health care they need. But 75% said they were actively seeking that care, mostly from specialists at the VA. On a more positive note, the number of group members who have signed up for the Department of Veterans Affairs Burn Pit Registry has increased sharply over the last years, peaking at 47% in the latest survey. Come on, man, we're not stupid. Burn Pit, that means maybe somebody going to get some money? I'm in on that. You probably already polluted my body, so I might as well get some. Yeah, then you could take care of us like you took care of the Vietnam vets or the Agent Orange vets. And the, that's right, and the veterans and their families at Camp Lejeune Water, the families get nothing, right? You can pay for that in spite of the fact that we poisoned you. That is so bullshit, it's ridiculous. An overwhelming majority of younger veterans, 83%, believe that cannabis should be legal for medicinal purposes. More than two-thirds of veterans in the survey own a personal firearm, but 86% of the group favors universal background checks for individual person guns. Come on, man. I mean, the question is, why do 14% not believe, not the 86% that are, like, perfectly reasonable, who the hell is the 14% that doesn't believe that's reasonable? So, interesting little poll there. Number two. Trump targets intel chiefs over threat assessments of North Korea, Iran, and ISIS. Oh, my God. Here we go. The United States President Donald Trump is pushing back on his top national security advisors and their assessment of the threats posed by North Korea and the Islamic State. He's an intel wizard now. Not only does he know more than our generals, he's an intel wizard. The president's foreign policy tweet storm yesterday morning comes a day after U.S. intelligence agencies told Congress, in particular Dan Coats, right, that North Korea is unlikely to dismantle its nuclear arsenal, that ISIS remains a threat, and that the Iran nuclear deal is working. They did not mention the crisis at the U.S.-Mexican border, for which Trump has considered declaring a national emergency. The president went on to say, North Korea relationship is best it's ever been with the U.S. Well, you're talking, I will say that. That's better than not talking. Are they going to do anything? The president then tweeted, decent chance of denuclearization. Okay. Now remember, everybody, hope's not a COA. COA means course of action. Hope's not a course of action. So, yeah, Dan Coats, that's the hazard when you tell the truth, all right? The president's comments drew a rebuke from ranking Democrats on the Senate and House intel panels. quote, the president has a dangerous habit of undermining the intel community to fit his alternative reality, Warner said in a tweet. People risk their lives for the intelligence he just tossed aside on Twitter. Adam Schiff, right? It is a credit to our intelligence agencies that they continue to provide rigorous and realistic analysis of the threat we face. It's deeply dangerous that the White House isn't listening. I will say this. Adam Schiff is probably as political and unafraid to twist the truth as the president. Well, two peas in a pod right there. Yeah, neither one of them. How about ISIS, right? Neither one of those guys is prone to tell the truth. CIA Director Gina Haspel said ISIS is, quote, still dangerous and that it commands thousands of fighters in Iraq and Syria. On Iran, Trump said Tehran has curtailed its troublemaking in the Mideast since he withdrew the U.S. in 2018 for the nuclear deal Iran reached with the U.S. and other Western nations. Still, he called Tehran a source of potential danger and conflict. The intelligence people seem to be extremely passive and naive when it comes to the dangers of Iran. They are wrong. Be careful of Iran. Perhaps intelligence should go back to school. Coates said Iran continues to pose a long-term threat. He pointed to the support of the Houthi rebels in Yemen's civil war, its support of Iraqi Shia militants, and its efforts to consolidate its influence in Iraq and arm Hezbollah, which have in turn prompted Israeli airstrikes. So anyway, the president trying to get after, you know, playing for his wacko partisans. But people that read and know the truth, they know the truth. Right. Or at least, I mean, Dan Coates, he's straight up. Right? If you watch him, if you see him in long format, you'll see. He is a straight shooter. Number three in the top five on Early Bird. Bipartisan House group introduces bills to stall Syria, South Korea troop withdrawals. Whoa. A bipartisan group of eight House lawmakers on Wednesday introduced two bills to make it more difficult for the Trump administration to withdraw troops from Syria and South Korea. Yeah, you know, to me, it goes on. The bills introduced by freshman representatives Tom Malinowski. Democrat from New Jersey, and Van Taylor, Republican of Texas, would limit the funds the administration may use to pull troops from either country. The first bill was entitled Responsible Withdrawal from Syria Act. It says that the U.S. cannot draw down active duty troop presence in Syria to below 1,500. It currently stands at least... It says it stands at 2,000. So you see the politicians getting into the president's foreign policy space. Always love that. Number four, I plead with you to look at this very closely. A retiree tells a panel studying the effects of anti-malarial drugs. So this is, you know, this is an ongoing kind of drumbeat that you see, and that is the long-term effects of anti-malarial drugs on service members, and can everybody stand those drugs? So, not good. Number five, peace with the Taliban. Trump warned of pullout risks. So I mentioned earlier today Ryan Crockett and his article. Quote. So let me go back. Discussions between a U.S. envoy and the Taliban are advancing weeks after the administration said it wanted to begin drawing down troops in Afghanistan. That has prompted some critics to note that President Donald Trump is telegraphing a withdrawal, the same thing he accused President Barack Obama of doing by saying he wanted to end the American combat mission in 2014, which was stupid when he said it in 2011. I know, because I was there. right? And what it spawned was a whole series of phone calls from where I was in Helmand Province to Pakistan so that local leaders could talk to the Taliban and say, hey, I know you're the shadow governor of Helmand. Just want you to know we're working with the Americans because we have to. As soon as you come back, we're ready to do business. Right? All of that. Yeah, that's all that happened. Quote, it's an effort to put lipstick on what will be a U.S. withdrawal, said Ryan Crocker in an article that he wrote in the Washington Post. I'm just looking to see. The top Republican in Congress, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, cautioned the president against a hasty exit from the war. Quote, while it is tempting to retreat to the comfort and security of our own shores, there is still a great deal of work to be done, McConnell said on Tuesday. And we know that left untended, these conflicts will reverberate in our own city. James Dobbins, special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan during the Obama administration, said Trump seems to have abandoned the conditions-based strategy he espoused in 2017. The future of troops in Afghanistan is anybody's guess, he said. Yeah, that conditions-based thing came out of the mouth of Jim Mattis, schooled the president, this is how we do this stuff, and now he is off on his own. Dobbins went on to say, I don't think anybody, including probably him, can predict his behavior. You know what? And after 2 years of watching it, pretty close to being true. Gina Haspel had some comments, right? She's the director of the CIA. Testifying on Tuesday, quote, if there were an eventual peace agreement, a very robust monitoring regime would be critical, and we would still need to retain the capability to act in our national interest if we needed to. Again, and given the size of the mission there now, I mean, it is not robust by any means. It is enough, but it is not robust. So, how you draw it down, again, that's the president trying to, you know, he's trying to, the world the way he wants it to be, not the way the world is. So it absolutely positively somebody just sent me an email. I love the General Christmas interview. It's great stuff. Yeah, if you haven't heard it yet, first of all, General Christmas is an amazing guy, right? He becomes Marine Corps history in 1968, towards the end of January and end of February, as he's part of 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines that heads up there. And the stories they tell, I mean, they weren't prepared to, you know, do urban fighting. You know, when the hell was the last time the Marine Corps did that? Never? World War One? Most of it in the woods, right? Don't remember any epic Marine confrontations going house to house in World War One. World War Two, right? Bamboo houses, right? The closest it came was on the island of Okinawa. That was the largest civilian population in which, you know, we fought on. So, yeah, go to Vietnam, fighting the Viet Cong for the most part. And even when Marines fought the NVA in the northern part of I Corps up by the DMZ, you know, they were mountain battles, right? They were jungle. They were, you know, they were in forests and vegetation and things like that. It wasn't, we didn't get it on the cities. So they're headed to Wei, busting out the FM 6-5. Or what was it? No, it's not 6X5, it's a squad. 6-1? Marine Rifle Company in the attack or some shit like that? Marine Rifle Company operation? 6-1? Is that it? I'd have to look it up. I shouldn't know. No, I shouldn't know that. I haven't even thought about that. Fleet Marine Field Manual, I think they called them. FMFM. A couple of interesting articles. And I tried to get Grant Newsham to come on this week, but I have not been able to do it. number one, how will Japan defend itself if it can't get its youth to serve? One of the things Grant's told us that serving in the military is not looked at as an honorable thing in Japan, and that they need to change that. So, speaking of Director Coates testifying, he was testifying because the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, which is Dan Coates, released its annual worldwide threat assessment. And it is a written statement that goes with the testimony that Director Coates and the director of the CIA, Gina Haspel, I think that's how you say her name, it's the written part of their testimony. There's a lot of hand-wringing over this supposedly an agreement in principle with the Taliban. What the hell does that look like? And it has to be ratified by the Senate, yes? Right? If it's a peace deal and it's going to bind the nation. Otherwise, it's just a simple executive order that can be done like any other executive order, undone. Taliban say they're not looking to rule Afghanistan alone. Two stories about overseas operation, and then I will be out the door for the day, and you'll be able to listen to General Christmas. Taliban say they're not looking to rule Afghanistan alone. Now, here's one of the things you have to understand. When you're a Muslim and you're negotiating with the infidel, which would be us, you are not bound to any agreement you would sign with the infidel. In fact, because you're bound to kill him or convert him, those agreements are meaningless. Yeah. I don't know what else. So what else is there? And we learned that in 2004 during the fight for Najaf. We had Marines from 1st Battalion, 4th Marines down there. And they're serving with the Iraqi army soldiers who had fought against, a lot of them had fought against the United States twice. They were like, yeah, bro, I'm not lying. I'm glad to be on this side this time, because when we go in that mosque and you guys blow it open with your tanks and you start dropping those bombs on them, it is going to be awesome. The walls will be red with their blood. And we said, all right, everybody slow down with that bomb and mosque stuff, all right? We don't like to do that. Why? You can bomb that mosque. They're hiding inside of it. They're your enemies. How can a great power like that not kill them, not annihilate them? Well, we think what we're going to do is we're going to negotiate with them. And then we're like, no. They'll lie to you. They'll lie. They'll put down their guns. If you release them, they'll go get another gun in 10 minutes, and they will fight again. And that's what happened. And they were telling these hilarious stories. Okay, look, you don't have to go. We will go. Just help us with your tanks and your aircraft. Please. Yeah, we think we're really negotiating this one, boys. And they were like, you got to be kidding me. You guys are idiots. The Taliban said Wednesday they are not seeking a monopoly on power in a future administration in Afghanistan, but are looking for ways to coexist with Afghan institutions, the most conciliatory statement to date from the militants. The statement came amid intensified U.S.-led efforts to resolve the long-running Afghan war. U.S. envoy Zalmay Khalilzad reported this week there had been an agreement in principle towards a framework for peace with the Taliban, who now control almost half the country and carry out nearly daily attacks, mainly targeting Afghan security forces and government officials. Suhail Shaheen, a spokesman based in the Gulf Arab country of Qatar, where the Taliban have a political office, said that once U.S. forces withdraw from Afghanistan, the Taliban want to live with other Afghans, quote, tolerate one another and and start life like brothers. After the end of the occupation, Afghans should forget their past and tolerate one another and start life like brothers. After the withdrawal, we are not seeking a monopoly on power. We believe an inclusive Afghan world where all Afghans can see themselves in it. My God, if we do that, if we buy off on you leave and then we'll all live in peace, we're dumber than shit, man. That's straight up stupid. The Taliban have never been interested in sharing power. That's why this war continued. They've never been interested in a compromise. And so if by promising such a thing, they would get your dumb ass to leave, then you get everything you get. The problem is the people that agree to it, like the Bushes, like the Condoleezza Rice, like the Colin Powells, like the Dick Cheneys, like the dumbass Donnie Rumsfeld, they don't pay that butcher bill. Somebody else does. Some innocent person who gets blown up by an IED that's brought to the United States, right? Or some service members that go fight them. These kind of stupid, idiotic things. Last story I'll talk about today. Al-Qaeda's advance in northern Syria threatens a fragile truce. So once again, you got the pickup trucks with the guys with the baseball hats on backwards, the black things over their faces. Yeah. It only took a few days for the Al-Qaeda-linked militant groups to seize more than two dozen towns and villages in northern Syria from rival insurgents earlier this month, cementing their control over an area the size of neighboring Lebanon. The advance by Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or the Lebanon Liberation Committee, was the most serious blow yet to a September ceasefire brokered by Russia and Turkey that averted a major government offensive in Idlib province, the last main stronghold of Syrian opposition. It highlighted the growing threat posed by Al-Qaeda at a time when its rival, the Islamic State group, is on the verge of being defeated. See what I mean? Like, come on. Are we that stupid? Like, you know, General Mattis leaving the building? Please. It's horrible stuff. Horrible stuff. All right. We're going to take another break. When we come back, you will hear Marine Corps retired Lieutenant General Ron Christmas. And it is the 51st anniversary of the Battle of Hue City. And so you're going to get to hear an interview I did with him a couple years ago. Yeah, as I said earlier this week, my quality assurance maven that lives in Canada, in the province of Saskatchewan, where it's about 100 degrees below zero this week, said, "Hey Mac, go into 2016 because there's great content in there that a lot of people have not heard." So she's a smart woman. We'll do that. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. General Christmas. I will be back tomorrow. Peace out.
This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.